You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. Check out our courses at newchurches.com/courses to learn more about essential church planting, essential campus pastoring, guest services, our digital access pass for the Mosaics Multi-Ethic Conference, and much, much more in the coming months. My name is Daniel Im, and I'm here with the Ed Stetzer, the uninterrupting Ed Stetzer,
who is I'm going to take a long pause now. Yes. Well, I like the dramatic entrance. Okay, I'm back. All right, good.
That's good. Well, today we have a question from Jason, so let's listen in.
Hey, my name is Jason. I'm in Yuma, Arizona, and my question today is about how to do the 501c3 for new churches and ministries, you know, to go to the nonprofit part of it and what it entails and kind of a detailed aspect on that.
All right, Ed. So a 501c3 for new churches and ministry. Now, do you need a 501c3 to be a church plant, though?
Aha. So hence we begin the important conversation.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is really, really essential as well. Of course, a 501c3 is actually the language in the U.S., mm-hmm. right? So there's different language and not-for-profit status in Canada. We got people listen all over the place. So I can't address all of them, right? There's certain reporting obligations under Canada's Not-for-Profit Corporation Act, the NFP Act, all this sort of stuff. But let me address what is true, and I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV, but what is true
in most countries.
I actor portrayal. It's actor portrayal. All right, so this is really, really important. In most, for sure in the United States, and in most countries that are built on the same kind of English civil law from Gumsrup, you don't have to seek tax exemption. You are already tax exempt. Mm. In other words, now there's lots of people who are good people who are right now advertising online. You can say, hey, you come in, we'll fill out your 501c3 exemption. Okay, now, first, if you're in a denomination or a network, you're already covered by theirs. So
that's huge. Can you just say that again for those who missed that?
Because if you're in a denomination or network, and in the U.S. and in most other countries, you're already covered, even in a loose non-connectional denomination. So wow. Let me explain what that means. Because the only time you're going to care about your nonprofit exemption is when you go into the post office and you seek to get your bulk mailing permit, and they're going to say, we need a copy of your 501c3 exemption letter. What other places are going to ask, the bank accounts are going to ask for, is other things. They're going to ask for, in the U.S., they're going to ask for your EIN, your employer identification number, your tax ID. Canada's going to ask your tax ID number. They're different things. So when you are asked for that, all you have to do is call up, and all the major networks know this, and all the major denominations know this. All you got to do is call up the denominational headquarters. Now, I know that language is going to bother some of you who don't have the local church is the headquarters of the denomination. But for this moment, you need a denominational headquarters. So if you're Assemblies of God, I know you're not a denomination, you're a movement, but pick up the phone, call Springfield, and say, I need the tax-exempt letter.
I wonder who you're talking about.
And now,
Springfield?
Springfield's where the... No. Yeah, that's not a reference to the Simpsons. Springfield, Missouri is where the Assemblies of God's headquarters.
Yes.
It's the center of the Pentecostal universe. And so, well, the people at Cleveland, Tennessee would take argument with that, but nevertheless, the Assemblies of God's largest. Or Southern Baptist. So Southern Baptist, everybody knows Southern Baptists aren't a hierarchical structure, I think, because they see all these people who are Southern Baptists doing their own thing. Okay, mm-hmm. So, but you call up the executive committee leader of the Southern Baptist Convention, say, I need the tax exempt letter. They'll send it to you. And it's a letter that basically says you are covered under the tax exemption as a cooperating church. Now, you can do the same thing with ARC and all these, the Association of Related Churches. So this is a very basic thing. So under English, kind of historic English common law, the churches didn't have to be declared to be exempt. They already were exempt. And so think in terms of, you know, even like the Declaration of Independence, right? We, you know, these are God-given rights or other documents early on. And so they never thought that they had to say churches were tax exempt. Now, the reason you may need that is to get state sales tax exemption. Again, all you need is the exemption letter from your denomination network. Now, let's say you are truly an independent church. You still don't need it, but you'll have to persuade some people sometimes that you don't need it. In other words, when you go to the post office and you want to talk about bulk mail and nonprofit mail, you'll kind of have to explain it to them. There's lots of places online that'll sort of explain this. But you know, if you get a grumpy person at the post office, not making any stereotypes that people could go postal, you might find that challenge. Now, and I know I'm talking too much, Daniel. So please, but this
this is good. You are an encyclopedia of church planting information. So this is good.
More of a Wikipedia. Okay, I just make this stuff up as I go. all right. Now the tricky part was though, he said or organization. Okay, because he said church plant or organization. So if he's setting up a separate thing, ministry, organization, he may need to file for tax exemption for that. I mean, this is typically a church planning podcast. So typically all those things would be ministries of the local church, and it is covered under the exemption of the local church, which is most often covered under the exemption of the national entity or the network. Now, two things. You should get advice from a lawyer I'm not a lawyer, nor do I play one on television. However, most lawyers will automatically think, because guess what? I love lawyers. My brother's a lawyer. There are Christian lawyers. I've met both of them. So I'm not opposed to those things. But asking somebody who does the business whether you need to have it done is a bit like walking by a shoe shine place and say, do you think I need my shoes shined? Of course you need your shoes shined. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is I would ask maybe a lawyer who does not have a direct financial benefit from you filling this out. But again, the law of the land as is that your church is tax exempt by nature and by virtue of the church. And if you go to what will often happen is they'll say, well, you know, some group wants you to prove that you're existing, functioning as a church. You do that not through a 501c3 letter, which does make it easier. So you can, I mean, if you want to spend a few hundred bucks and do that, it does make it easier. But also, too, you can just bring in your what do you call them? You know, Eric Geiger and I had a big joke, bulletins, worship folder, program. Yeah,
there's a Twitter
bring
poll.
Bring that in. Yeah, exactly. I think bulletin won. I thought we moved away from the bulletin, back when, we were still, singing, the three verses of a four verse hymn. But anyway.
This is good. And so now do you, what about issuing tax receipts for donating? Are you saying you don't need a 501c3 letter for your church in order to
exactly if you read 501c3 is a section in the IRS code.
Yeah.
If you read the section of the IRS code, it doesn't say you have to apply to this. It says churches are.
Yeah.
And so all you need to do is to send them this information and then explain that too. So in other words, you don't need a letter saying you're exempt. But again, I'd get one from your denomination or your network anyway, but you don't send that to people. You send them a giving statement.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Now, if you look actually at the 501c3 code, you're right. It basically says that churches that meet the requirements of IRC section 501c3 are automatically considered tax exempt and are not required to apply for and obtain recognition. So these are the five bullet points that actually will help you know whether or not you meet the requirements. Number one, the organization must be organized and operated exclusively for religious, educational, scientific, or other charitable purposes. Number two, net earnings may not inure to the benefit of any private individual or shareholder. Number three, no substantial part of its activity may be attempting to influence legislation. Number four, the organization may not intervene in political campaigns. And number five, the organization's purposes and activities may not be illegal or violate fundamental public policy. If you say yes to all five of those things, then you automatically, as a church, qualify and are considered tax exempt. Now, what Ed was talking about earlier about contacting the denomination or the network, I mean, in IRS language, it's the parent organization. And what you want to ask specifically is, do we have a group ruling? Right. So if the denomination or network has a group ruling, then that is what will allow the church to be considered as tax exempt. And yeah, you're right. You don't need to do that.
But you already are tax exempt. You're only doing that for the ease of, you know, giving it to someone else if you're filling out a form somewhere else.
Exactly. Exactly. Totally. Right.
Now, a couple of things in there, too. In that list, I predict that two of the things you just listed will be repealed in the next year.
Yeah, well, you've been you're in all these conversations. So, I mean, what are the two that you think?
They're things related to political activity.
Okay.
Donald Trump has made. Now, again, these folks in like Canada or Australia are like, what in the world does this matter?
I mean, we all know everyone in the entire world is. I mean, Donald Trump is making the news in every country.
They have heard of him. they have heard of him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, everyone knows. Around the world, I had to turn off my my phone. Yeah. You know, I get the news alerts, and my phone's like ding, 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 ding. Every time Donald Trump does something, it's like breaking news.
Yeah, okay,
but he wants to repeal what's called the Johnson Amendment, and what that would do is allow churches to do this. Now, for what it's worth, I think it's a mistake for churches to engage in political lobbying. However, I don't think that probably needs to be a law either. It's just we got more important things to talk about, like the gospel of Jesus Christ, rather than endorsing particular candidates. But that's another story for another day. So, yeah. So again, this exemption issue, people say, you know, let's try to take churches' tax exemption away. It's kind of a very big deal because of the way people have, in English common law, have thought about churches not being subject to the state in the same way. So that's why you're not asking for exemption. You're just coming into existence and not having to pay taxes, which who knows, will that always be the case? I actually think it will. Another thing too, there's the inurement. You heard in there, you read the inurement clause.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that the church can't like benefit. Now you can get a salary as a pastor, but the church can't benefit. If it closes down, the money doesn't all go to you. It has to be dispersed some other way. So actually, you'll need legal documents. So you need a constitution and bylaws. And one of the things that you'll need in there is to say that upon closure, the church resources go to, typically you'd say the denomination, if you're denominational. I would put in a clause for church planting.
Yeah,
and so then maybe, you know, if you're Wesleyan church and you close. The Disciples of Christ actually had that as a kind of a policy. You know, they're a mainline denomination, very progressive theologically. And what was really fascinating, though, they just years ago put in this clause. And so when a lot of these churches started closing and started planting new churches, and they were having a real commitment to racial diversity, so you've got all these evangelical church plants reaching. So Disciples of Christ becomes this leading player on the police on the mainline side for church planting, largely because of a clause that, at least this is one of the leaders explained it to me this way, because of a clause in their organizing document. So I think it's a good idea to do that. And, you know, someone can change that later. I get that, but it's still a good idea to do that.
Yeah. I mean, on that note, when it comes to helping your congregation with stewardship and helping them even in wills and drawing up wills and all that, and there's a lot of tax benefits to designating or donating part of your estate to a charity. And I mean, on that note, I mean, it'd be great to actually write that in to say, hey, I want part of my estate to go towards church planting. Right. So as a way to kind of systematize and celebrate that within your congregation.
Yeah, for sure. And in that case, you know, what I would do is I would typically say, because, you know, networks are still new on the scene, I actually would, designate it towards a denomination that you'll know with a greater likelihood to be around when you died. You know, you're a young man, Daniel, you got decades to go. Mm-hmm. So you might say, you know, I want to leave this to my denomination, to the North American Mission Board, for example, for church planting, or other like-minded organizations in the event that, you know, either their successor organization or something of that sort. But I think it's a good thing. You know, I work at the Billy Graham Center here, and we receive charitable bequeaths on a regular basis. And I think they really help us to advance the mission. We're doing really good things for gospel work with people who've left things to us in their will.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks again for listening in to the newchurches.com podcast that talked about 501c3 and very technical legal matters today, but hopefully that was helpful. I mean, it is a issue
I'm
and it's
aware.
A common question.
I don't play one on TV.
Yeah. But it is
don't have people come get me.
So you're just going to interrupt me in the closing now? Yeah.
No, that's true. It's true. Let me just don't rely on my legal advice. Even though it's right.
Yeah. Well, in the show notes, we'll have links. And I mean, thanks again for listening in, and be sure to submit your questions. We will catch you next time.